We were the recipient of the Climate Smart Grant. As a result of that, we have a financial assistance program. And that financial assistance program is focused on those growers that want to try one of these practices. And so we're excited to be able to offer up to $100 an acre so we can mitigate the risk and they can figure out where they fit in this space.
It's not only about the farmer profit through growing winter canola, it's really about the sustainability with the overall industry and our global demand for more energy with a rising population.
Today on Ag News Daily, we don't really do that anymore. It's kind of more of a welcome back to the weekly edition of the Ag News Daily show.
Do we like that yet? I don't know. It's not fully comfortable or uncomfortable one way or the other.
We're not necessarily news weekly because the content comes out daily.
Right.
But we do report on a week's worth of headlines.
That's right. We've got a lot of headlines in today's action-packed show, Tanner, heading into the Easter weekend. Happy Good Friday.
Right. Happy Good Friday. But we know that the fall appears to be far away at the moment, but football will be here before we know it. And at this week's annual meeting, the NFL team owners voted to radically alter the way kickoffs are executed. Under the new rules, the kicker will continue to kick from the same 35-yard line, but rather than be flanked by his teammates, the rest of the kicking team will be on the opponent's 40-yard line, eliminating the traditional running head start, Delaney. Besides that, kicker and returners are the only ones allowed to move. No other players can move until the returner touches the football or the ball hits the ground. So that means fair catches, in which the returner could signal for, are no longer part of football and not allowed. So nothing like adding a twist to the NFL, just like the twist some of these wild headlines are going to bring us this week, Delaney. But
I don't know who wrote that headline.
That's exactly the way it came about. So let's get into some ag-related headlines and talk some weather. The Central and Southern Plains will see cold temperatures in much of the hard red winter wheat territory this week that will may cause some damage. Temperatures will rise with possible showers into the weekend before another system goes through early next week. Our friends in the Delta, soils there are in good shape across most of the region and had some big enough breaks between storms that could lead to some early planting where the soil's not too wet. However, cooler and wetter conditions may limit planting in some of those places, though, with other systems moving through and another chance of rain early next week for them as well. In the Northern Plains, showers will move across to the region throughout this Easter weekend that may include some areas of heavy snow. Temperatures will warm out, though, to finish the week. Here in Iowa, we're going to peak today on Friday and remain mild through the weekend. Periodic chances for showers and thunderstorms will exist in the forecast, including the eastern half of Iowa here Friday afternoon and again on Sunday. So much of Iowa will get covered. We did see some weather-related news, though, come out of Fort Bend County, Texas. The recent hailstorm there left a trail of destruction at the Fighting Jays solar farm. This caused extensive damage to thousands of solar panels on the 350-megawatt Fighting Jays solar farm. According to industry experts, hail damage is increasingly becoming a significant issue for solar farms, with annual losses estimated at $2.5 billion due to equipment underperformance caused by malfunctions and severe weather conditions. The shift of these large solar panel farms has gone to thinner glass, coupled with the expansion of solar sites in hail-prone regions. This exacerbates the vulnerability of solar infrastructure ruined due to hailstorms. So it'll be interesting to see, Delaney, as the weather seasons progress, if we get more headlines like this.
Well, we really could see an early jump to planting, and our first crop progress report will be released as of Monday, so we'll be able to report on that headline next week. But as you mentioned, there were a few major headlines this week that dominated the news, including an unexpected development for the livestock industry. Milk from dairy cows in both Texas and Kansas have tested positive for avian influenza. The H5N1 strain was confirmed by the Texas Health Commission in three different Texas dairies and one Kansas dairy. Although yet to be confirmed, dairy cows in New Mexico have also exhibited symptoms of illness. The Texas dairy industry, Tanner, I learned, contributes roughly $50 billion in economic activity across the state, and they currently rank fourth for milk production nationwide. This news comes just weeks after officials in Minnesota announced that goats had seen an outbreak on a farm near a bird flu population poultry outbreak where the virus was confirmed. It's also believed that this is the first time we've seen avian influenza found in a U.S. livestock herd. The USDA has worked to put consumers' mind at ease, though, sharing that the commercial milk supply is safe and risk to people is low. They stated, quote, "At this stage, there is no concern about the safety of the commercial milk supply or that this circumstance poses a risk to consumer health." So really trying to reassure the public.
It always makes you think when they have to reassure the public what's actually happening. But we've got another top headline this week that dominated the news. A Baltimore container ship story that most of you have heard. As many outlets have been reporting, the container ship lost power and rammed into a major bridge in Baltimore early on Tuesday, destroying a span in a matter of seconds that plunged into the river in terrifying collapse that could disrupt a vital shipping port business for months to come. Minutes before the ship, the length of three football fields, hit the Francis Scott Key Bridge spanning the Baltimore Harbor, the man piloting the vessel sent out an urgent warning that the ship was out of control and about to hit the 1.6-mile-long bridge. The pilot of the cargo ship named the Dolly issued the mayday call, saying that they could not steer the ship and it was headed towards the largest span of the bridge at a very, very rapid speed, the Maryland Governor Wes Moore stated. After the ship hit the bridge, going about 9 miles an hour, six people were reported missing. The missing men were that of a part of a group that was working to repair potholes on the bridge. As of early Thursday morning, none of the missing men had been found, and authorities stated now the mission is focused on recovery, Delaney, not rescue. Baltimore is the largest entry point in the U.S. for large agriculture and construction equipment like tractors, combines, forklifts, bulldozers, and other heavy-duty trucks that are bound for us here in the Midwest. According to DAT Freight and Analytics, a freight exchange service, this could be coming at a bad time as Midwest farmers have begun to plant this year's crop and construction work is beginning to pick up. You don't replace a bridge overnight, said John Schmeiser, chief operating officer for the North American Equipment Dealers Association. He also stated that this is something, Delaney, that will take months, if not years, to replace and rebuild.
Well, as you mentioned, this is going to have dire impacts for agriculture. I was happening to do a little reading after this story broke earlier this week, and the Port of Baltimore is the sixth largest port of significance for the import of fertilizer on a big quantity basis, with 351,000 metric tons of the product moving through this port last year. To put that in perspective, the Port of New Orleans is about double that at 794 metric thousand tons. The primary fertilizer moving through this port is typically urea, ammonium nitrate, especially here in April, although we have seen urea and potash move through this port last year as well. The primary source, however, coming through the Baltimore port is UAN from Russia. The port also handles a variety of other ag products, including sugar, soybeans, corn, wheat, and a lot of other grocery items, Tanner. So a really big loss there with that.
Hopefully not coffee, because everybody needs our coffee.
Well, I know.
Here in Iowa, we had a historic farmland sale that happened in Grundy County. On 229.95 acre property, the farmland had previously been owned by the same family since the 1870s. It recently sold at auction on March 20th for nearly $4 million. About 91 acres of this property, Delaney, had a perfect 100 corn suitability rating. Overall, the farm carried a weighted average of 95.2, but that's some pretty high quality Iowa farm ground.
I think they might have gotten a steal for that price tag.
Oh, it could be in some people's eyes.
Yeah. Well, a recent survey done by AgCareers.com revealed some major U.S. agriculture and food industry workforce needs and gaps. AgCareers.com surveyed employers to gain a deeper understanding of the insights needed into skills they're seeking and identified the most significant skills gaps in the workforce. Employers ranked problem solving and decision making as the most necessary skills for their employees, followed by organization and planning and teamwork. Problem solving and decision making were also identified as areas with the most significant gap for both current employees and new graduate hires, with only 18% of U.S. employers saying that new graduate hires adequately prepared and had those skills ready upon hire. 76% said those new hires were equipped with those skills needed, though. Survey data also examined industry-specific skills required for employees, such as sustainability, data science, and food science. And results indicated the most extensive knowledge needs were in agronomy and precision agriculture fields, followed by animal science. That full report can be downloaded for free at agcareers.com, Tanner.
Well, if we have cows getting bird flu, I can see the animal sciences.
That makes sense.
Ethanol output jumped to a three-week high, and inventories hit the highest level in more than a year, according to the data from the Energy Information Administration. Production rose to an average of just over 1 million barrels per day in the week that ended March 22nd. The EIA said in their report that was up from the week earlier and the highest since the 7 days that ended on March 1st. Ethanol inventories this week through March 22nd surged to 26.092 million barrels, the agency stated. That's up from 26.009 million barrels the previous week and is now the largest level for a 7 day period that ended since March 17th, 2023. So we got a big stockpile going there.
That's right. But in other news, or maybe non-news, we really should say we don't have any news about the updated GREET model, since nothing has been released yet from the Biden administration. Now, that model was expected to be released on March 1st, mm-hmm. but still no word has been heard from the administration, as many in the ethanol industry and in the ag industry, including our good friend Mitchell Hora, are anxiously awaiting that decision.
Maybe the middle of April. We'll see.
Maybe. We'll find out. But recent headlines have gained traction of an exciting new LSU researcher who has developed a new vaccine against bovine respiratory disease, or BRD. That's an illness that kills about 8 million calves each year, and they're saying could save the cattle industry more than $1 billion annually. Most cattle producers now use a commercially available modified live BRD vaccine containing several live viruses to protect their herds, but the disease still kills more than one out of every five calves. The lead researcher from LSU created the vaccine by genetically modifying bovine herpes virus type 1 to display protective proteins. The other focus here, Tanner, has been that after 10 years of R&D, there's now a pending patent for the vaccine, which, if acquired by a commercial company, could be a big deal, as they could manufacture that vaccine for commercial use for the industry.
All right, Delaney, are you ready for this week's headline of the week?
I'm so ready, Tanner.
Well, let's see here if we can get a smile out of you on this one. A farmer has been caught illegally breeding massive sheep to sell to private hunting reserves. You didn't smile where I thought the pause would potentially allow you to take this out of context. Because you know, if we stop that headline there, that's exactly what everybody else is going to do.
That's true.
But there is an 80-year-old farmer, Arthur Jack Schubarth, who owns 215 acres of a ranch in Vaughn, Montana. And he has pleaded guilty to criminal charges of wildlife trafficking. Prosecutors say that he illegally used tissue and testicles from wild sheep that were killed by hunters in Central Asia and the U.S. to breed hybrid sheep for the sale, which brought higher prices for those who had shooting reserves. Apparently, Jack's Ranch specializes in the purchase, sale, and breeding of alternative livestock. Or just maybe giant sheep.
Maybe just giant sheep. They're a little scary looking. I saw a photo.
Well, today's episode is action packed with headlines and two interviews. We have some exciting news from our friends at Truterra to share with you in today's first interview, Delaney. So why don't we get into that first conversation now?
We've known a lot about Truterra on the farm for profit side of things. So I'm excited for our listeners to learn more about Truterra on Ag News Daily. We have Mariah here. She's the director of field services.
You got it.
What is that?
What is field services? My role is really about customer success. So I spend a lot of my days working through carbon data collection, grower support, customer support. And then we also have this thing that we got called the Climate Smart Commodities Grant for $90 million. And so I also run that.
That's exciting. Now, for the listeners who don't know anything about Truterra,
yes.
Who is Truterra?
Truterra is a sustainability business of Land O'Lakes. So we are all about making economic, agronomic, and environmental benefits for our producers.
That's great, because Delaney had to ask me. She
well,
goes,
yeah,
I
we
just
were talking
okay.
about this earlier.
That's okay.
And I was really curious to know, you know, there's a lot of different companies popping up in the carbon and environmental space, so it's like, are you guys positioning to measure carbon sequestration to help growers get paid? Are you being that middleman to help advocate for them with some of the big companies that are looking into this space? So maybe it's a combination of all those things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our main focus is we are for the farmer, right? And so what that means is we are trying to create programs and opportunities for our farmers to get paid for things that they're already doing, for things that they may want to do. And then at the end of the day, we're gonna work with these downstream companies, our partners, these CPGs, and we're going to sell those environmental assets.
Can I clarify CPGs?
Consumer Packaged Good Company.
Perfect. Thank you.
Well, that's a great clarification, because it's been fun to get the behind-the-scenes look at what Truterra has become. And through that process, I've learned that a lot of your employees are very closely tied to agriculture.
Yeah, I mean, at one point we had, you know, over 70% of our employees were working on farm or were farmers themselves. And so I think that's one of the fundamental differences about Truterra, is that when we say we're for the farmer, we're truly for the farmer, because we want to make things that we would actually invest in, right? And that is so critical and so important, because without the farmer, you're not able to create these environmental assets to sell to these other CPGs.
So as we sit here today, we've got a couple of exciting opportunities for our listeners to be able to sign up or enroll in different programs. So why don't you tell us about the long-term adopter program?
Yeah, so we are really excited to be among the first of in the industry to bring forward an opportunity for those producers or growers that have potentially been a long-term adopter. And what I mean by long-term adopter is that they've maybe been no-till, strip-till, doing cover crops for 10, 15, 20 years. And so now there's actually a program that they can get compensated for. There's a way for them to enroll into our program, strateraag.com, and they can get in and they can start cashing in on that money.
That's big, Delaney, because we've been talking about the rule of additionality for a long time.
For sure.
And this group has not been included for pretty much the entire time we've discussed it.
They have not been included, and that was fundamental to the Truterra business. That was something that we wanted to figure out. How do we make that work? How do we include this group of growers? It's also something that we brought forward from our USDA grant that you're going to be seeing more of coming out this summer. We're excited to have yet again another opportunity for these growers, and so it truly is a focus for us.
Now, as you look at the last few years, is it correct, I'm getting this correct, you're heading into your third or your fourth growing season of having producers getting paid for some of these programs?
We will be going into our fourth growing season.
Okay, that's what I thought. But sounds like, you know, the results you've seen, the ability for farmers to enroll and get paid out has doubled, tripled, quadrupled over the last few years.
I would love to be able to say that number, but what I can say is that this year alone, we've given out more money than we have given combined. And so every year we're growing, we're scaling. Enrollment to date for 24 is already surpassing same time at last year. And so we're really excited for the trajectory and the path that we're on, and that's exciting.
We know that these practices, the shifts in the operations, especially those of our listeners, is not always a inexpensive process. The other opportunity that we have for our listeners to enroll is in a form of financial assistance, correct?
Yep, absolutely. And so I mentioned that USDA grant. So we were the recipient of the Climate Smart grant. As a result of that, we have a financial assistance program. And that financial assistance program is focused on those growers that want to try one of these practices. And so we're excited to be able to offer up to $100 an acre for them to be able to try that, so we can mitigate the risk and they can now, you know, figure out where they fit in this space.
$100 per acre. I've heard of other companies and programs that are doing that, but I think that might be the highest rate I have heard per acre for some of the other programs that are out there.
Yeah, certainly. And we tried to make it appealing. We wanted to make sure that people were interested. And so we're paying, really, we've broke it down into practices, so you get a certain dollar amount for no-till, a certain dollar amount for cover crops, but ultimately, if you're doing all of those things, it adds up to $100.
So just recapping where we're at, we've got programs that are available for growers who have already been doing these practices, and for those growers interested but maybe not quite ready to switch all of their acres over, we also have programs through Truterra that will allow for some of that transition, the cost of looking and testing out some of those.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were on the early riser session this morning. I think one of the things that Kelly and I talked about there, Kelly Garrett, was around trying new things on your operation, right? And how do you take 10% of your acres and try something new? And I think there's no better place than this program to be able to try that, because that incentive is there.
Yeah, and it's exciting to see what we can help incentivize or allow them to make those small changes. So what types of things would qualify for that financial assistance?
Yeah, so the financial assistance is going to be implementing cover crops, going to a no-till, a strip-till, even doing a reduced tillage. Those are the things that are going to get you qualified.
Very good. So as we talk about this with our listeners, is there anything else that you want to share before we get the direct contact for where they can start to go and sign up for themselves?
Yeah, the biggest thing for me is educate yourself. Ask the questions. There's a lot of programs out there. There's a lot of opportunities. Figure out what one is going to fit for you. I think there's a misnomer, like we started this conversation, that there's not a program for everyone. And I firmly believe that no matter where you're at in your journey, there's definitely an opportunity for you.
That's great. So now,
yes,
where do they go to get signed up?
Yeah, so the easiest thing to do is to go to truterraag.com/enroll, and that will bring you to a form, and you'll be ready to go.
Hey, we appreciate you taking the time
today.
Thank
you so much.
And I'm glad that I got to educate Delaney and our listeners for all the little secrets that Farm for Profit's gotten to benefit of. So I appreciate you hanging out.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Well, stay tuned for that final acreage number for their 2023 acres enrolled. That should be released here fairly shortly. But next up, we turn our conversation over to a recent discussion we had at Commodity Classic with Courtney Farah of Corteva to talk about a newer program rolling out to growers, their Winter Canola Project.
Courtney, you have a lot of things within your wheelhouse as U.S. marketing lead. You mentioned earlier you're overseeing everything minus corn and soybeans, which is honestly a lot of product.
That sounds like a lot of product.
It is a lot of products. It's a lot to remember and keep track of.
Well, we're excited to dig into specifically winter canola, which is a newer product that's hitting the pipeline here and really should have some growers excited about the market opportunity, I think, of what's ahead. But I have to admit, before we started today's interview, I didn't know that there was a difference between canola and winter canola, Tanner. Yeah.
I had no idea either, and I'm excited to learn about it.
Absolutely. It's quite different. So we're excited to offer a new revenue opportunity to our farmers, and it's not only about the farmer profit through growing winter canola. It's really about the sustainability with the overall industry and our global demand for more energy with a rising population.
So where does winter canola fit geographically into our producer listeners?
Yes, so geographically, winter canola is different than spring canola. When we hear canola, normally it's northern, it's up in Canada,
right,
or the Dakotas. That's really where the U.S. spring canola lies. Winter canola is different. So winter canola is part of a double crop system.
Ah.
If you think about like winter wheat or any type of cover crop, that's where winter canola fits in. So when you think about moderate climates that still gets moisture but doesn't have that real hard freeze,
right,
that's where winter canola is. And right now for a Pioneer winter canola presence, that's in that Kentucky, Tennessee area where, again, they've got the right growing conditions. They're used to that double cropping system already. That's
right.
Really our main play as we begin here in the early years.
Right. So she's talking the Mid-South, Delaney.
Mid-South.
Mid-South,
that's
right, is what you could say. But when you think about Kentucky, Western Tennessee, Southern Illinois, Southern Indiana, Northern Alabama, that pocket is where our winter canola presence is.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the double cropping system with winter canola, because as you mentioned, it's really focused on grower ROI is part of the reason that it's been introduced. And you've got a big partnership that was recently announced, which we'll get into here in a second. But talk to us a little bit more about what the focus for including winter canola in a double cropping system has been.
Yep. So the rotation for winter canola is really the farmer would put their corn on. Normal season for corn, they would harvest their corn, and then that September time period is when the winter canola would then be planted. So it's really the growing season is September through June. June is when harvest would happen for the winter canola crop rotation. So a typical rotation for a farmer would be corn followed by winter canola, and then winter canola would then be followed by either soybeans or cotton, really depending on the geography in that Mid-South area and what that next rotation would be.
So like Delaney teased, though, you've got a partnership that is already helping create a market for this new winter canola product. Can you tell a little bit about those partners?
Absolutely. So our collaboration or partnership is with Bunge Chevron. And Bunge Chevron formed a joint venture not long ago, within the last year and a half or so, and they're known as BCAR. So if anyone in the public hears BCAR,
okay,
that's Bunge Chevron joint venture. So it's Corteva and BCAR, and it is only Pioneer products. So Pioneer's portion of that, or our responsibility, is to produce and provide the seed and then be that agronomic provider. So we're really with that farmer from planting to harvest all through the growing season. Then from there, the farmer will harvest the seed, and Bungie will then take it over from a grain processing perspective. And then from there, Chevron will take it from ultimately the oil end user.
Oh, wow.
Yep, so and they will market the oil.
From start to finish, the grower is supported.
It is a closed-loop system start to finish for that grower. Absolutely.
That's great.
And as you look at Chevron specifically, sustainable aviation fuel, SAF, has been a big focus point, especially for the corn industry. But it's interesting to note that the focus for winter canola is also very similarly focused on SAF. Talk to us a little bit about what that system looks like, because as we look at corn right now, we've talked a lot on the podcast, a lot of corn doesn't have a low enough carbon intensity score to be used as a sustainable aviation fuel, but winter canola is positioned a little differently.
Right, yes. So no matter if it's corn, soybeans, or winter canola, any type of oil right now, the whole point of that is to get the lower carbon score, right? With the amount of energy that is needed in this world, the lower carbon intensity that we can get, obviously better for the overall environment and sustainability. With winter canola, what makes winter canola so unique from corn or soybeans is the plant-based oil in winter canola has a very high oil content.
Wow.
So although the seed is incredibly small, a lot smaller than a kernel of corn, the oil content is what makes it so high in comparison to maybe like soybean. A soybean seed is about 20% oil content. Winter canola, what RC provides, is around 40%.
Wow.
So it's almost double soybean. So again, it's just another additional source of energy. You know, the corn isn't going away.
Right.
The soybeans aren't going away. But we need more energy, and the lower carbon, the better.
Right.
And that's where winter canola is coming into the U.S.
And our listeners are very well versed in the carbon intensity score and obviously the interviews we've done with sustainable aviation fuel about how South American ethanol can be considered a second crop. And a lot of that CI score goes to the first crop. So by being able to provide winter canola as a second double crop probably really
right.
benefits the grower as well.
Absolutely. So that comes back to my initial comment on just the profitability of the farmer. So with our partnership with Bungie Chevron, Bungie will help with the premium. So the grower will work with Bungie on a premium. And then in addition to that, that's where the tax incentive credits for the grower and other incentives from the lower carbon intensity score comes into play for that grower. So really they're being profitable on the front end with the premium and then the score of the lower carbon.
So I'm curious, what's the future for winter canola looking like? How ambitious is that growth cycle going to be for Pioneer?
And that all, it goes back to the growth trajectory for the industry, right? And I was just in a podcast on corn with ethanol and soybean presence, and it's constant discussion in the industry right now, no matter what conversation you're in. And that's the overall population is expected to grow by 2 billion people by 2050.
Right.
So with that increase in population in such a short amount of time, you need another feedstock source, and that's where winter canola comes into play. Our projection, you are limited in the U.S. from a growing environment as well. We're still learning about the hybrids and making sure that they are durable enough to survive that winter, and that's why we're pocketed where we are in the beginning, but we expect it to grow quite substantially over the next several years.
Now, does the winter canola still look as beautiful as regular canola does?
Oh, it does. It's so pretty. You know, I wish we had a background picture. It looks the same as what spring canola does up in Canada and up in the Dakotas. It's beautiful yellow flower, just like you would envision in any picture.
Now we've got two seasons for our Instagram specialty
That's
picture.
True.
There you go.
That's
there
true.
You go.
Well, Courtney, I know that this has been a really big partnership between Chevron and Bungie, as you mentioned, but you already have growers that are starting down this path. Talk to us a little bit about the adoption of what you're expecting to see over the next few years.
Yep. So I'll start off. We started this pilot in 2023, so just last season. We have 15 growers right now in that Kentucky, Tennessee area, really testing this out. We want to make sure that we understand the product and the growing conditions and what it takes for that farmer to both plant and harvest canola. So we have 5,000 acres in the ground with Pioneer Winter Canola as we speak today. Next year, we're looking to ramp that up this upcoming season to 30,000 acres. But then that hockey stick goes up to, our trajectory is around 1 million acres in the next five to 6 years. That is our goal. That is our goal. And I think the demand will certainly be there.
Well, I hope that our listeners are interested in what we talked about today. So if they want to learn more about it, how best do they get in touch with somebody?
Yep. The best way to get in touch with someone is to contact their local Pioneer retailer in that geography, or the Bungie representatives as well, within their local area. So either way.
That's great. I love you spending the time with us today to explain this, because I knew nothing about it going into it. Right, Delaney?
Well, yeah, we knew very little, and I'm sure probably our listeners were in the same boat. But Courtney, you did a great job joining us today, and we appreciate your time on the podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate it as well.
Tanner, I certainly learned a lot about winter canola. I did not know a lot before that interview.
That's right. I knew next to nothing, and I'm glad that she was there to carry us along that discussion and fill me in a little bit.
Me as well. But as we focus our attention onto our final wrap-up here, we've got to talk markets, as all the focus this week was on the Prospective Planting Intentions Report, which was released at 11 a.m. Central Time on Thursday. Now, heading into the report, the average pre-report estimate for corn acreage suggested the USDA would report 92 million acres. That's not what they did, Tanner. In fact, they showed 90 million acres of corn, down 5% from last year. Did that shock you?
It did.
Well, we also saw the average pre-report estimate for soybean acreage reflected at 86.3 million acres, which is compared to 83.6 million last year. The March report, in fact, showed 86.5 million acres in 2024, up 3% from the year prior. Other key findings in the report said all wheat planted acres would total 47.5 million acres, down 4% from the year prior. Winter wheat will show a 34.1 million acre number. And area planted for spring wheat for 2024 is expected to total about 11.3 million acres. And lastly, durum wheat planted is expected to total just over 2 million acres, up from 2024, 22%.
Wow.
Cotton here was also expected to see about 4% above last year at 10.7 million acres. But following the release of the report, corn futures had a little party. They jumped about 10 cents higher in new crop futures and finished the day at 477.5, up 15 cents on the board from the open. Soybeans also saw the bulls take charge following the release of the report and moved about 16 cents higher immediately following, only to finish the day just 5 cents higher on the board at 1186.25.
Yeah, that's right. In other market headlines, CONAB reported Brazil's soybean harvest is just over 66% complete as of the end of last week. They should be well over 70% done by the end of this week. Markets will be paying careful attention to the demand as Brazilian beans continue to come online. China appears to be releasing small batches of their own domestic stockpiles into the market until there is adequate supply coming from Brazil. We also had the quarterly hogs and pigs report released on Thursday, which highlighted a slight uptick in the U.S. hog inventories. As of March 1st, hog inventories were up 1% from March of 2023, but down 2% from December of the end of 2023. Other key findings included in the report showed that there were 74.6 million hogs. Of those, 68.6 million were market hogs. So that's a look at this week's market summary. Delaney, and when I walked into the studio, I asked if you believe the number, and what was your response?
Well, I don't really think it matters if we believe the number or not. It matters what the markets believe, but this certainly might be an opportunity here for growers to make some forward or cash sales as we've seen these little bumps here in the market.
That's right. Stay in tune to your break-even, your cost of production, and what your marketing goals are, and stay in tune to the Ag News Daily Show. Or podcast, if you're still listening to it as a podcast. We appreciate your patronage on all of our platforms. If you haven't discovered us on social media or some of these video clips, go find us. Instagram, TikTok, we got the video out on YouTube. We appreciate any and all feedback.
That's right. We've got still more changes, I think, yet to come as we figure out the best format for our show. And I did appreciate a couple of listeners reached out and said they missed the daily show.
Oh, that's good. Well, we'll see if we have to or we find a way to incorporate some more regular content on the podcast. But for now, we're going to stick with the same structure to continue to build and take in all of your insights. But Delaney, for today, what do you say? Should we let the listeners go?
Let's let them go.